So first off, can you just tell me a bit about your career and how you were first introduced to music?
How I was first introduced to music, like as a
Yes.
kid?
Let's start from the beginning, I guess.
I grew up in Worcester, Massachusetts, and I started playing guitar at 12 years old. And after taking some classical guitar lessons, I enrolled music school called Peabody Conservatory in Baltimore, and I got my undergraduate degree there, playing classical guitar, but also doing sound recording. So I grew up playing guitar and playing in bands, but also having a technical side as a sound engineer.
Cool. And when did you come to New Orleans?
As I said, I started a career as a sound engineer, and I was hired by a producer named Nick Spitzer to come to New Orleans in 1997 to be his producer for a public radio program called American Roots. And that program featured local New Orleans musicians, and I worked there from 1997 until 2003. And then I went to go get my PhD in New York City. And when I came back in 2006, I started my research on New Orleans music.
Cool. So when you, I guess, when you left and then came back, what did you find had changed, or what did you notice was any different?
In 2005 was Hurricane Katrina
Of course,
struck,
yeah.
and so all of the musicians that I planned to study had been displaced, and then most of them came back to New Orleans and tried to resume their performing careers in an environment where the whole city is being rebuilt, including the music industry and the live music venues and the festivals that we all know and love in the city.
So I guess Katrina must have amplified any of these challenges, but what do you think are some of the main challenges for musicians and professionals working in the industry in New Orleans?
There's a lot of challenges facing musicians. I've focused on a few, and I think the challenge that faces a majority of working musicians is economic. New Orleans is unique as a live music destination. There's a lot of opportunity for live music performance, and there's a sort of culture of music education and musical performance set up to sort of bring new generations of New Orleans musicians into the fold of music performance. But the economic infrastructure that supports them is very weak and very top heavy. So musicians, on the one hand, are attraction for tourists and for really anyone going out to hear live music. They're the foundation of the live music economy, of course, culture economy more broadly, but they tend to be the last to be paid because the profits that they generate go to institutions like venues, like the tourism directors, the culture brokers that hire them, the festivals that invite them to play on their stages, and so on. So, as I talk about, and I think the article you've read, it's what's called trickle down economics, where there's a lot of money to market and promote and package live music, but the bulk of that money doesn't trickle down to the musicians themselves.
Yeah, that that term culture brokers I read about, I found that really interesting. It's very accurate in terms of how kind of talent gets spread around, how everyone views things, how everyone gets access to music and where the money kind of comes out. So a big thing with New Orleans is festivals. So how do you think festivals, either negatively or positively or both, impact more local musicians?
Well, there's no doubt that the festival season, especially French Quarter Fest and Jazz Fest, mm-hmm. is the high point of the musicians' annual year financially.
Yep.
The reasons for that are a little bit more complicated than just the festivals hiring bands. So, for instance, French Quarter Fest and Jazz Fest hire lots of local musicians, but they pay them far lower than the national acts. That's not to say that they're not necessarily competitive with other local jobs. They're just not competitive with the higher visibility touring acts. So it creates a sort of a conundrum, whereas the festivals need local music because that's what most listeners are coming out to hear, or what they expect to hear here in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, say, very different from maybe like the Newport Jazz Festival or the JVC Jazz Festival in New York, or even the Chicago festivals where, you know, there's not as much of an emphasis on live music and food, etc. But at the same time, the festivals are aren't paying the musicians sort of a fee generally commensurate to their drawing power. So, but on the other hand, there's also all kinds of other live music performances that happen around the festivals. So even though, say, a local band might not be getting as much as a national band, they're getting, you know, multiple opportunities to play for, to collect together fees for performance opportunities.
Yeah, I've noticed a lot of those different street performers after festivals like Buku and Jazz Fest just kind of attracting large crowds, putting on a show on the road or on a sidewalk. Some of the coolest music I've actually seen has just been free, which I found really interesting.
And then, you know, there's lots of opportunities for busking or free live music in New Orleans. And then the question, you know, I mean, I tend to think things from a consumer and worker standpoint. So if a consumer is listening to a live musical performance, then the question is, you know, what type of compensation
mm-hmm.
are they giving? And then who's getting that money? Is it just, are they just buying drinks at a bar and a portion of the bar goes to the band, or are they buying a ticket
mm-hmm.
And then a portion of the ticket goes to the band, or are they seeing a band for free and then there's no economic exchange? And then from the perspective of the musician who's a worker, they're performing for customers, but where the money comes from can, as I just outlined, can be from a variety of different sources and can, you know, go up or down exponentially depending on the nature of the job and the, you know, the mm-hmm. The visibility, sort of, what's the word I'm looking for here? The
exposure?
Renown of the performer, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess kind of foray into the next big topic. How do you think tourism has grown to impact New Orleans, and how has that impact kind of developed over the past 20, 30 years?
Well, in the mid 20th century, New Orleans tourism developed around traditional jazz music, and Metz Preservation Hall opened in 1960, and the Jazz Fest opened in 1969 or 70, and there were, among many institutions that were sort of packaging local music for tourist consumption.
Mm-hmm.
So I think really it's just a matter of increasingly over time, the city and the state began to promote itself more and more as a cultural destination for tourists to come and enjoy live music. And there's been a whole infrastructure built up around them, and that could be anything from Jazz Fest to, say, you know, a couple from out of town who wants to get married in New Orleans in the French Quarter and hire a brass band to parade them around, and then, you know, that brass band will get contracted by some type of event planner, and the event planner will pay the brass band, and they'll pay the city a permit fee to hire police to come out and lead the parade. And so anything from a small scale event like that to a huge event like Jazz Fest that draws millions of people all kind of capitalize on the image or the sort of resourcefulness of New Orleans music that draws fans and appreciation from around the world.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So one thing I'm kind of curious about, when you chose to come to New Orleans, kind of what drove you to come? Did you just think it'd be really interesting to research, or was a decision based on other factors?
Well, I just had a job in New Orleans, but I was very lucky because I am a researcher of music, but I have the, you know, incredible luxury of living in one of the most musical cities in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And so I could have done my research anywhere. For instance, you know, my colleague in the music department, Dan Sharp, of course, he lives and works here as well, but his research is based in Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe your teacher studies some type of culture from some faraway place, and that's quite common in the academy.
Yeah.
You know, I have the incredible benefit of researching the music that surrounds me because it's one of the most interesting places in the world, and so I wouldn't necessarily say it's hard to say that I was drawn to it because I moved to take a job, but I fell in love with the music of the city and became fascinated with the lives of musicians and the challenges they face. Yeah.
Cool. So I guess with everything going on right now, what do you think the future holds for the music industry in New Orleans? And how do you think musicians are kind of going to deal with this major change? I know it's definitely going to impact festivals and tourism for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I think, you know, live music gets played at events, and events are what all around the world are canceled and, you know, effectively banned right now. And so, short term, all musicians are out of work, and so is everybody associated with the music industry in terms of live music, certainly, which is, you know, festival promoters and production staff and caterers and service providers and everything else. So the entire industry is ground to a halt, and it's generally an industry that where people get paid as a contractor, so there's no salaried people who are continuing to collect income while there is essentially a lockdown against live music performance.
Yeah.
So the short-term effects, I think, are catastrophic, and it shows how musicians and the music industry in general is incredibly vulnerable to, ultimately, to not just a crisis like this, but really everyday fluctuations in capitalism.
Yeah.
In other words, this is an entire industry that does not have health insurance, that does not have steady pay, that is where everyone working in it is essentially a gig economy worker. I mean, obviously the term gig economy comes from a musical performance. Mm-hmm. And so everyone is contingent on getting hired for contract work, and all of that work is gone. So I think long term, of course, there's no way to know, and it's entirely to do with structural decisions that are completely out of our control.
Of course, yeah.
Whether or not large crowds are going to be able to gather at a certain point this year, and or not, and that happens, there'll be restrictions on the number of people that are able to gather, and then whether or not that happens, people are going to actually come out and commune with one another and face the risk of getting sick or spreading the virus. So there's obviously an incredible amount of unknown in terms of the future. It's the scale of it is kind of unfathomable.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that all my friends in the industry are making plans for, say, you know, Jazz Fest to come back in October, or which is when it was rescheduled, or other specific events, but we can't actually say for sure that those are going to happen, and if they happen, that they're going to happen at the same scale and rate of pay that have happened in the past.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm sure it's major disruption. So do you think that have you talked to any of your friends, or have you heard from any musicians that are changing the way they go about advertising and putting out their music and changing their kind of their approach to getting their music out there? Or has everyone just kind of been trying to wait it out and see what happens?
Well, I think there's two things that are happening. One is that in the last decade, the recording industry has lost its financial contribution to everyday musicians.
Mm-hmm.
So we no longer sell physical media, CDs and LPs, at a rate that any musician can really sustain themselves. And then streaming for any but the most popular musicians does not pay any type of livable salary. So
mm-hmm.
there's not a recourse away from live music and towards recorded music in terms of most artists' income, except for, you know, small opportunities like Bandcamp and other, you know, websites.
Yeah.
And then in terms of live musical performance, you know, what we've seen is a sort of efflorescence of streaming distance, you know, long distance performances that artists are asking for donations through Venmo and Cash App mm-hmm. and other monetary exchange, you know, platforms. So I think it's going to be interesting to see if that impacts, you know, average musicians in any type of way that sustains them. My guess is that it will, you know, bring in small amounts of money, but not remotely replace or even come close to providing a wage where, you know, everyday musicians can get by. We're going to need, you know, ideally, musicians and workers in the music industry would be included in federal packages for bailouts and other types of assistance, but because they're contract workers and don't generally have a payroll stub, they're almost always left out of any type of major federal programs that are, you know, tend to be based on taxes and payroll.
That's pretty crazy. So after Katrina, can you already identify any similarities to the impact of Katrina versus the impact of this pandemic right now? Or do you think that the effects will kind of align with another?
Well, Katrina was a very localized, it was catastrophic, but it was a very localized disaster.
Yeah.
And in that sense, it was very different. And then what's, you know, common among them is there's nowhere to work. Everybody has, you know, to deal with their family and their loved ones and making sure everyone is safe and alive. And that's a priority for everyone. And then, you know, there's just the simple fact that there's no opportunities for performances. I think beyond that, the situations are pretty different. There's obviously, I mean, New Orleans is here. It's just, it kind of can't be used in this moment, like almost everywhere. And then the question of small businesses and individuals going under, I mean, who's going to be able to sustain themselves for this long with everything closed up without taking recourse to some other opportunities, and who knows what those even are. So I think really the story of live music and New Orleans musicians in particular isn't that different from really what, you know, probably tens or maybe even hundreds of millions of Americans are going through now, which is an uncertain future without money coming in and no strict sense of when that's going to get resolved.
Yeah, definitely. So kind of a closing question. How do you think that, I guess we're talking prior to this pandemic in hypothetical, but how do you think that being a musician in New Orleans differs from being a musician in other major cities like Chicago or LA?
Right. Well, I think there's a few things that are unique about New Orleans. One is that New Orleans has a set of musical styles that are very local.
Mm-hmm.
And so while, you know, Chicago is known for the blues, it has all kinds of different types of music, including polka, Mexican music, and indie rock, and really too many types of styles of music to associate with one place. But New Orleans is known as a city of blues. It's known as a city of brass band parades. It's known as a city of a particular style of regional hip-hop called bounced music. There's local traditions like the Mardi Gras Indians that you just don't have anywhere else. And so the music of the city is unique, and it's also in that it's very, what I call, place-based. It's very much attached to New Orleans itself, and then it's also very race-based. It almost all comes out of African-American culture and people. So that would be one thing. And then the other thing is there's just a bustling live music scene in New Orleans, and so there's many, many opportunities to play that don't necessarily happen in other cities. And I think it's interesting, even from the perspective of a Tulane student, where people come here from other places, and if they want to learn how to play jazz or other styles of music, there's often even opportunities for them to perform out in the city in a way that might not happen if they've gone to, you know, a university in New York or Iowa City or some other place.
Yeah. Most students I know say that without New Orleans, Tulane is not Tulane, you know, like it makes it what it is, which I think is pretty evident. So thank you so much for talking with me, Matt. I really appreciate it. I know these are weird times, and I'm sure you got a lot of stuff going on. Is there anything else you wanna add?
No, I think that covers it, and I'm glad we had a chance to talk, and I wish you luck finishing this assignment.
Thank you. I really appreciate it, Matt. I'm going to email you over that release form. If you could just sign it and send me a picture or scan it, that'd be great.
Great. No problem. Good luck with the rest of your semester.
Yep, I appreciate it, Matt. Stay safe, stay clean.
You too.
Have a good one.